The morning of today's daf in Baba Basra's Kufayin Beis. We are on Kufayin Aleph Amud Beis. We are halfway down in the Amud. We are talking today about Shtaros. We have been talking about Shtaros since the beginning of the parak. 10th parak of Baba Basra is dedicated in its entirety to the halachas of Shtaros regarding contracts for loans, contracts for sales, and the basic makeup of a shtar. So we discussed in the beginning of the parak, all the way back on Kuf Samach, that's 12 days ago, this idea that, first of all, just the layout of a shtar, what a shtar actually is going to look like. We talked in the beginning of the parak about Get Makusha versus Get Pashut. Nowadays we write Get Pashut, we write a simple shtar, one-sided document. We're on the front side, which is the only side we're going to use. So you write the ksav, you write the nusach, the hashtar, and then you have two witnesses signing directly below that. Beginning of the parak, we talked about Get Makusha, this idea of a more complex type of shtar, where it's two-sided and it's folds, and we discussed that in great detail. We are coming off now a Mishnah. The Mishnah takes us back to Kuf Ayin Amud Beis, 170b, and the Mishnah over there talks about this idea of a loan document where there was a partial payment. So if there's a loan document with a partial payment, so what do you do with the shtar? So as I pointed out already before, it's very obvious, very clear from the Mishnah, that what we don't do is that we don't write any kind of appendage or addendum to the shtar, meaning on the shtar itself we basically leave the shtar intact. So if I have a loan document and now the borrower wants to make a partial payment, so what do I do? What do we all do? So if you remember yesterday, so that was Machlokas in the Mishnah between Tanaim, exactly what to do. Machlokas in the Mishnah, thank you. Machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. So going back to the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda says, Yachlif. So you simply write up a revised document. So we're going to write up a revised document reflecting now the new payment that's due, because obviously you don't know the entire payment, you only know a fraction of it. And in this revised document, so you're just simply going to date it back to the original date. Now that obviously is a problem, as we pointed out yesterday, because now basically you're predating the document, even though it's a revised document, even though it really is just a continuation of the previous document. But the bottom line is that I'm writing a document today and I'm putting a date on it of an earlier date. That's predating a document. But Rabbi Yehuda says you could do that. Machlif. And Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah says, no, we don't do that. Leave the original document untouched. And in terms of a reflection that there was a partial payment, write a shover, write a receipt, and hand the receipt obviously over to the lova, to the borrower. And that will be the borrower's ticket, literally, it will be the borrower's ticket to prove that he's paid part of the payment. So that in the event that the borrower now comes at him at the full face value of the loan, so the borrower is going to say, what are you doing? I paid back some of it, don't you remember? And he's got the shover to prove it. Okay, then we saw yesterday the Gemara brought in the opinion of Rav, and Rav's opinion was that I don't agree with either Tana. I don't agree with Rav Yehuda, I don't agree with Rav Yossi. Rav's position, as we explained yesterday in the Gemara, is that yes, you can rewrite the document and you can write a new document, and you can predate it, but Rav's of the opinion that it can only be done by Beis Din. Meaning the Edom themselves cannot rewrite the document, but a new document, a revisionist document, can only be written by Beis Din. Why? So I quoted the Rashram yesterday. The Rashram says, because Beis Din has that kind of power, where even though, generally speaking, you cannot predate a document, but Beis Din, based on its powers of Hefker, Beis Din Hefker, has that kind of executive privilege, executive power, where they could basically take monies and shuffle them around as they see fit. So Beis Din can revise the document, but you and I, nor the Edom, cannot revise the document. That's the opinion of Rav. Huh? Rav is not a Tana. In terms of Rav arguing with the... In terms of Rav arguing with the Mishnah, so the Rashbam said yesterday that Rav sometimes has the status of a Tana. He was the next generation immediately after Rabbi Yehuda Nasi and Rabbi Chia. In fact, as I pointed out yesterday, he was Rabbi Chia's nephew. So he literally was on the border between Tanaim and Amoraim. And the Gemara says it. The Gemara didn't say it yesterday. The Rashbam did say it. The Gemara says on occasion that Rav Tanu Palag, that Rav has the ability to argue with Tanaim. And the Rashbam says this is an example. Even though, again, the Gemara didn't say that, but that's what the Rashbam said. Okay, so who do we follow? Do we follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi or of Rabbi Yehuda? In other words, in the need to write up a new document, are we going to write up a new document or no? We're just going to keep the original document intact and just simply write up a shover. So the Gemara yesterday seemed to side with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi. We will deal more with that in the course of today's daf. Let us continue in the Gemara itself. We are in Kuf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, and we're starting with the words Amar. No. The Umistabra. We are starting with the words of Mistabra. Mistabra is the second wide line on Kuf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Yesterday, Machlokas Amoraim, in terms of whether or not we write a receipt or we don't write a receipt. Or to put it in other terms, whether we do follow like Rav Yossi, we don't follow like Rav Yossi. Remember yesterday, we had the opinions of Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel said that we do not follow like Rav Yossi, we do not write a receipt. And the Gemara quoted the opinions of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, who said that we do write a receipt for the borrower in the case of partial payment. And the Gemara says, and really when it comes, if you think about it rationally, logically, it makes more sense that we should be writing a receipt. Why? The Gemara goes on to explain. Third line down, a third wide line. So the Gemara says, because let's consider. Let's imagine that we don't write a receipt. So if we don't write a receipt, so then what's going to happen? So that in the event that the Mava loses a loan document, so then, Yochel Halavachadi. So then the borrower now is going to literally eat and be happy, meaning the borrower is going to have the time of his life. In other words, there was still part of the payment that was due, but he doesn't have proof that I owe it. We're all good. And Maskevla Abayi Velamai Kosman Shover. So Abayi says, so what does that mean now? You mean to tell me that we do write a receipt? Because, I'm sorry. Let me do that again, and let me do that better. Isachadacha ain't kosvin shover. So the Gemara says, if you have the opinion that we don't write a receipt, no, I was good. Avat shara shozei yochal halavachadi. So maskav abai velamai kosvin shover. So the Gemara says, no, I was good. I'm sorry. So and Abai says, and now what? So now you tell me that we do write a receipt. So avat shara shozei yochal halavachadi. So the Gemara says, now you're putting the onus and the burden of holding on to his document on the borrower, because now that you're writing a receipt for the borrower, so basically what you're asking the borrower to do is, listen, hold on tight to that receipt, because that receipt is proof that you paid part of the payment. And if he loses it, so now what's going to happen? The lender's going to be ecstatic, because now the lender's coming at him with the full face value of the loan, and the borrower is going to try to argue, hey, I paid part of it. You have any proof? Yeah, but I lost it. In other words, so you're putting a burden, seemingly an unnecessary burden, on the part of the borrower. So Amalei Rava, in. So Rava says to Abaye, that's fine. Meaning, what are you suggesting? That we put an extra burden on the borrower? I'm good with that, says Rava. Why? Because Eved Lo V'Ish Mavet. The Gemara here quotes the Pasuk in Mishlei. The Pasuk in Mishlei basically describes the kind of relationship, the nature of the relationship between a lender and a borrower. What is the nature of the relationship? The Pasuk in Mishlei is very blunt. It says, Eved Lo V'Ish Mavet, that a borrower is a slave to the lender. Okay. Now, the Pasuk in Mishlei is giving, first of all, just simply good advice, meaning when you're borrowing, you're putting yourself in a compromised position, because now the lender is going to always be over you, demanding his loan be paid back. But not only is the Mishnah giving good advice, but the Mishnah is also speaking, the Pasuk in Mishlei is also speaking about the halachic nature of the relationship, meaning that when we have a question of, should we burden the borrower or should we burden the lender? Meaning here we have a scenario in which partial payment was made. Who should now take on this extra responsibility now of more paperwork, holding on to the paperwork? So who should do that? Based on the Pasuk in Mishlei, where the Pasuk in Mishlei describes the Lova as the Eved, he's a slave, so that means that he's going to have to shoulder the burden of all this extra responsibility. So what Rav is saying in defense of Rav Yossi, and this is the Mistabra, this is the logic behind this. In other words, should we write a receipt? The answer is yes. Why? Because burden of responsibility should be placed on the borrower over that of the lender. Gemara continues. Tanan Hasam. Okay, we are continuing now with a Mishnah that we've already seen a number of times. We see it again. So at this point in time, just pause in the Gemara before we go ahead. So in terms of the writing of the receipt, the Gemara says pretty clearly that, again, it's Machlokas Tanaim, Rav Yossi, Rav Yehuda, whether you write a receipt or you don't. Machlokas Amoraim, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish say we write a receipt, Rav and Shmuel say we don't. And as far as the later Amoraim, Rav and Abaye, Rav is also signing on the position that we do write a receipt. So at this point in time, you take stock of everything we just said, so it seems pretty clear that the halacha favors this idea that we're going to write a receipt. Okay, stay tuned, because the Gemara later on is going to amplify this point. But in the meantime, however, we're going to go over a Mishnah that we've gone over before. This is a Mishnah in Shviyas. And the Mishnah in Shviyas tells us information that we've seen before. Shtar chava mekdamim psulim v'amucharim kasher. Pre-dated documents, disqualified. Post-dated documents are kasher. Okay. Now, as I pointed out before, and we'll say it again, you shouldn't predate or post-date either way. Meaning, if there's a loan, if there's a sale, if there's any kind of documentation, the date on it should reflect what today is. That's the best position. However, if you're going to shuffle the date around, so predating will disqualify the document. Why is it going to disqualify the document? So we've gone over this before. Especially, it works best by a loan, but it works by other types of contracts as well. In a loan document, if I predate it, what I am now doing is creating a fictitious time of a lien. Meaning today is the 13th day of July. If we were to predate the document to 13th day of June, so that means now that I am fictitiously creating a lien going from here all the way back to June. I didn't lend the money on June the 13th. I lent the money on July the 13th. And so by creating such a document and predating it a month earlier, so now that for me now is going to create a fictitious ability to place a lien on his property, a property that he already sold, and I'll be able now to collect the property as payment of my loan. So predating a document is no good, and it disqualifies the document. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, I'll just briefly mention again today. Does it totally disqualify the document, where it meaning to say that we disregard the document altogether? That's one possibility. Or another possibility is that the loan is existing. It's just that it no longer creates any kind of lien whatsoever. It's like a milvah al peh. Okay, so there is a range of position in terms of how to what degree we're going to disqualify it, but again, like I said yesterday, and we're saying it again today, we'll just use the words disqualification. Okay, predated document disqualified. Post-dated document, kosher. And as I mentioned yesterday, and I'll just repeat again today, why is a post-dated document kosher? Because it's not going to hurt anyone other than the lender himself. In other words, basically what the lender is doing is he's forgiving the lien from the loan today to whatever date we date in the future. Okay, and if the lender wants to forgive that, that's his prerogative. He certainly has the right to do so. But it's not going to affect any lokeach, any buyer of the property, because no buyer of the property is going to have illicitly have the properties taken away from him. Okay, fine. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Hamnuna lo shana lo shtari hava, v'ashtari mekach u'memkar afilu mu'charin nami psulim. So the Gemara now is going to try to limit this Mishnah that we just learned. Now the Mishnah was talking about loan documents. Rav Amnuna says that the Mishnah is only talking about loan documents and he cannot extend it to sale documents. Why? Before we get to the why, let's start off with the what. What is the halacha regarding shtar mecher, regarding sale documents? It must reflect today. And if it's either predated or postdated, so Rav Amnuna is of the opinion it's going to be disqualified by a sale document. My time. So now we said the what, now let's say the why. Why should that be? Gemara goes on to explain. Zimnin demazmin le'ara b'nisan v'kasav le'betishrei. So the Gemara says, let's say the sale actually took place in the springtime, in Nisan. And in terms of the document is post-dated, a half a year into the future. Okay, so that now the sale of the document is now reflected as Tishrei. Fine, so it's post-dated a half a year. U'misraim le'zuzi b'nibayn v'zavin le'minei. And now what happens is that the seller of the property between now and the fall, so sometime over the summer, he found himself some money, and he went back to the seller and he says to the seller, "Look, I know I sold you the property, and sorry." The seller went back to the buyer and said to the buyer, "Look, I know I sold you property, but I really didn't want to sell it, and I now have the money and I have the resources. I'd like to buy it back from you." Okay, and the buyer says, "Fine, no problem at all." And now, what's going to happen is v'chimati tishrei mapik lei v'amr lei hadus avanti minach. Now, what the let's call them by their original position, meaning let's call the seller is the one who sold it in Nisan, and the buyer is the one who bought it in Nisan. And again, the document was postdated a half a year. So again, the seller sold it and then bought it back before the fall, before Tishrei. And then what happens is that the buyer says, "Now in the fall, let me have my property." And the seller says, "What do you mean your property? I sold it to you, but then I bought it back, remember? And the buyer says, okay, but I'm holding a document saying that I bought it in the fall. So it must be, in other words, he's not saying the truth, but he now has a very strong argument based on the documentation, it must be that I purchased it back again from you. So the Gemara says, so if you're posting sale documents, so it can result in this kind of witness tampering.
Why didn't you take back the Shtar
Kli? Ah, so the Gemara says, okay, very good. In other words, that's what he should do. Right, okay, good. So Ihach Yishtar Yalvan Nami. So the Gemara says, well, if that's your concern, so why aren't we going to say the same thing by postdating a loan document? The Gemara goes on to explain. Zimnin diyaziv benisam v'kasav leishtar b'tishrei. So again, we're going to be operating with the same dates. Let's say the loan originated in the springtime in Nisan, and let's say we postdated a half a year, so that the note now is it's written in the note the month of Tishrei. Oh, Misramalei Zuzi Beni Beni Uparalei. And then what happens is that sometime between now and Tishrei, so the borrower's got some money, the borrower pays back the loan. Vamalei Havli Shari Vamalei Irkisli. And now the borrower is not an idiot. The borrower says to the lender, okay, I'm paying you back the loan, but I want that loan document, meaning I don't want that loan document out there. Give it back to me. And the lender says, look, I'm really sorry. I appreciate that you're paying me back early. I really do, but I don't know where the loan document is. V'ksiv le tavra. And now what we'll do is we'll write a receipt, because again, Rav Yossi and all the Amorim we quoted earlier says you'll write a receipt in such an event. V'chimatiz mane, mapik le v'amalei, hane hashta hu diyazit v'minai. And then comes the fall time, comes Tishrei. Now I know Tishrei is a month where we're doing a lot of tshuva, but apparently this guy wasn't so into his slichos and into his vidui. And in the month of Tishrei, he says, oh, look, you owe me this money. And he says, what do you mean you owe me this money? I paid you back for it already. He says, no, that was a previous loan. Look at the date of this document. The date of the document is in Tishrei. This is a new loan. And the Gemara says, so again, if you're concerned about the sale document where there's going to, because we postdated it, and because it could result in the holder of the note playing games in a post-dated document when it comes to sale, the same kind of games could be played with a post-dated loan document. So the Gemara says, Katsavrin Kosan Shover. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why Rav Amnuna is not worried about this, he's not concerned about this, because he doesn't side with the position that you write a receipt. He sides the position that you're not allowed to write a receipt, and because he's of this position that you're not allowed to write a receipt, so he will never get to this point. Okay. In other words, if you're of the position that you're not allowed to write a receipt, so the only way that you have to pay back your loan is only if you get the loan document in exchange for the money that you're paying back. Otherwise, you don't have to pay back your loan. Okay. Where are we right now in the Gemara? So we quoted the Mishnah Shviyas about the predating postdating. The Gemara quotes Rav Hamnun's position. I think we can make a distinction between a loan document and a sale document. Loan document predates disqualified, post-date is good. Sale document, it's all not good. And the Gemara now is going to conclude. Amalei Rav Yehmer l'Rav Kanava, Amalei Rav Yehmer amidifta l'Rav Kanava, Ina dekasvin and shtari me'uchrei vekasvin and tavra. So the Gemara says, here's what we do nowadays. Lamaisa, practically speaking. So we post-date documents, meaning it's okay, it's acceptable. And we write a receipt, meaning we adopt Rav Yossi's position, and Rav Yochanan, and Reish Lakish, and Rava. So we adopt the position in that we do write a receipt. So now the Gemara says, but because we adopt these two positions, we now enter an impasse. Because the writing post-dated documents and the writing of receipt can result in the kind of shenanigans that we just described. Where if we post-date a document, and then at a later point in time, the whoever the note holder is, in the case of a sale, it's the buyer. In the case of a loan, it's the lender. But the note holder will now say, okay, let's keep our comments to a loan. Okay, make it nice and simple. So in the case of a loan, so the lender's going to say to the borrower, okay, pay me back. The borrower says, fine, but give me back my loan document. And the lender says, I don't know where it is. He knows where it is. I don't know where it is, but... So what do we do? What do we do in such a situation? So the borrower will pay back the money, and we'll write a receipt. And the receipt we're going to date today. And the Gemara says, so now that we write a receipt, so now why aren't we not concerned about the fact that the lender is going to come around later on with his loan document that he quote-unquote lost, air quotes, where he quote-unquote lost, and he's going to come back and say, this is a new loan. Why aren't we worried about all this? Answers the Gemara. Because the Gemara says, because we know what the Amoraim do in terms of instructing their Sofrim. So the Gemara says, we'll start with Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba, when he talks to his Sofrim, this is the instructions in terms of how to conduct yourself. Ki kasvi ushtar me'achrai kasu hachi. Shtar denan lo bezmane kasvinan, ela achronai vekasvanuhu. So the Gemara says that in the case where it's a post-dated document, so reflect that in the receipt. You will actually write in the receipt, when you're writing the receipt, that this receipt is for a document which was post-dated. And if you know the date on the loan document, write that into the receipt as well. So basically, Rav Safra says, in order to avoid shenanigans, so simply record this in the receipt. Amle Rav Ashi Rav Kahana Ha'ina Deloka Avdin Hachi Basa Da Amle Rav Safra Le Safra. The first instruction, I messed up a little bit, I'm sorry. In the first instruction, so that's what you write in the actual document itself. And now the Gemara says, so now the Gemara says, now this is what Rav Safra said to his Sofrim. Meaning, what I messed up is I explained the previous Gemara this way. Okay, anyway. Kikas, you know, Hanitavri, when you write the receipts, Iyadisus Manadishar Kasvi, Lo Kasvi Stama. So if when you're writing the receipt, note on the receipt that the loan was a post-dated document. And therefore, when you're writing the date in the receipt, so just simply write the date that follows the date of the post-dated document. So that way, the receipt is always going to be date-wise following the loan document. So again, we're not worried about these kinds of shenanigans.
He's post-dating again?
He's post-dating the receipt.
I know, so I guess there's a double post-dating.
All right, great, fine. And again, post-dating in of itself is fine. And then the Gemara says, now if you happen...
What's the strategy behind post-dating in the first place?
Right, in other words, why do they post-document the loan doc? I don't know. I don't know what motivated them to do that. Okay. So and again, it only hurts the lender by doing that. Okay, fine. And the Gemara says, and if you don't know what the date was on the loan document and you're writing the receipt, so write the receipt and don't date it. Leave the date out of the receipt. And again, so that'll give you the ability to at least defend yourself if he's coming at you with this post-dated document saying, I have a receipt. Aye, but what about the fact that the date on the receipt is earlier than the date on the loan? There is no date on the receipt. Okay.
So in a way, by doing that, no date, this borrower can never borrow from the same lender again.
Or for that loan amount. For that loan amount.
Right.
Okay, agreed. The chol emes enafek l'rei. So I'm le'ravin le'rav Ashi, v'am le'rav Ashi le'rav Kahana. We're now on the top of Kofayin Beis Amud Aleph. V'ha ha'idna de'lo kavdin and hachi. Now, we don't do that. Meaning, even though these Amoraim have now given very clear instruction in terms of how to avoid these kinds of pitfalls, we do allow for the post-dating of a document, of a loan document. We do allow for the writing of a receipt. And again, if you're post-dating the document and the receipt's dated an earlier date, it leads to these kinds of shenanigans. You're going to have the lender coming at the borrower again. So the Gemara says, so again, so one point of advice was, note that the note was post-dated. Meaning write a note on the document itself saying that this is a post-dated document. Or on the receipt, write on the receipt that the note was post-dated, or post-date the receipt. Or write a receipt without any date whatsoever. So the Amoraim have given now advice in terms of how to avoid such a pitfall. And then the Gemara says, we're on the top of Kofayin Beis, I'm an Aleph, V'aha a'idna delo kavdin anachi. We don't do that. Meaning what our practice is, the Gemara is just telling us now what was done. Our practice is that we write post-dated documents, we write up receipts, we don't follow these suggestions that the Gemara just laid down. So, Amalei Rabbanan Takun LeTakenan Manda Avid Manda Lo Avid Iyuhud Asenan Nafshe. So the Gemara basically throws its arms up in the air. And the Gemara says, look, we told you how to avoid a pitfall. We've explained it to you. Meaning, you're going to either note it on the document, note it on the receipt, post-date the receipt. Don't write a date on the receipt. We've given you advice in terms of how to avoid such pitfalls. And now, You're not going to follow any of the advice, so I have to tell you, says the Gemara. That's your loss. That problem now becomes a you problem. In other words, you should be following. Right. In other words, right. The Gemara basically throws its hands up in the air. Like, in other words, the Gemara is saying, look, in terms of, I'm talking from the perspective of the Gemara. In terms of our practice, look, you're not being careful about this. You're writing post-dated loan documents. We're writing receipts. And you're not noting the discrepancy. Now, that's your loss. Okay. Okay, fine. But in other words, but right, you're right. You're conceiving of a reason of why a person would want to post-date. And again, if you're trying to do so in order to evade something, so then you're right. Exactly. You're not going to want to write the you're going to want to leave that out. Agreed. Okay. So, yeah. So in other words, right. So it seems pretty clear from the Gemara in terms of the halacha goes like Rav Yossi. The Gemara basically says that we do it. We write receipts. For the partial payment, for sure. In other words, but even the bigger chiddush, which the Gemara pointed out yesterday, is even for a full payment of the loan, where the lender says, "Look, I don't know where the loan document is." So under those circumstances, we're also going to write a receipt for the borrower.
Right. If you're concerned before that, if you do that, then the borrower has to keep the receipt forever.
Okay, and the Gemara says, "Fine." I mean, and that was Rava's point that we saw earlier this morning.
It's his fault. The fault was the lender.
I understand that, but the pasuk in Mishlei says, "Eved lo v'leish mavet," that the nature of the relationship is that the borrower is the one who has to shoulder this kind of responsibility. That's the pasuk in Mishlei describes. That's where you are in the relationship. You're the one who has to shoulder that responsibility. Amaluhu Rava bar Rav Shila lahanu.
Without a blank showing,
yeah,
can be used also to you make a new loan.
Right. So then I would again. So what I would recommend to the lender is that if you're going to lend him again and you know that he's holding a blank receipt, right, an undated receipt. Mm-hmm. So then I say to the lender, you got to think that through a little bit more. Sure. Right. Sure. Correct.
It's got to be the same amount.
Right. Correct. In other words, right. Change the amount. In other words, right. Just but you're. Your point is very good. Meaning, it's good sound advice to the lender. Amaluhu Rava bar Rav Shila lahanu kasve shtara akniyasa. So now Rava bar Rav Shila once again is talking to his sofrim, and he says, when you're writing a shtar hakna, when you're writing a sale document, ki kasve shtar akniyasa iadana yoma de kanisube kasvu viilo kasvu yoma de kamaisube. So let's say in a sale document, now not a loan document, but in a sale document, let's say the sale already occurred. And for whatever reason, at the time of the sale, we didn't write up any paperwork. No documentation. But obviously, the buyer's going to want documentation. So, a week later, 2 weeks later, a month later. So finally, we get everyone in a room together and we're writing up the paperwork. So, but the sale already transpired. Or let's say even it's a gift. Whatever the case is, it's a transaction, not a loan. So the sale already occurred. So now, here, you have the ability to predate. Because consider now that it actually already occurred. So, if you know exactly when the transaction occurred, write the date of the transaction. Even though, obviously, now that we are at a later point in time, we're going to be predating the document. But again, there's not a loan document. And therefore, that's fine. But if you don't know when it occurred, so then what date should you write in the document? Today.
Have
of course. In other words, when you're writing up a document, you have to have witnesses.
The witnesses that happened a couple of months ago.
Yeah, in other words, right. Those are the people going to be signing on the document, the people who saw the transaction. And the reason why is because you don't want to look like liars. Meaning that if you know when it occurred, so write that down because that's the truth. And if you don't remember exactly when it occurred, so now what are you going to do? You're just going to guess? You're going to make up a date? No, write today. And if when you write today, you're not lying, meaning that the document is being written down today. The sale took place earlier, but fine, you're writing it down as of today. Obviously, and the Rashi makes this point very clear over here, we couldn't do that with a loan document, meaning with a loan document, even if the loan transpired earlier. So but we learned the Mishnah and Shviyas. The Mishnah and Shviyas says that you're not allowed to predate a loan document. This ability to predate is only going to exist by Shtar Makneh, not by Shtar Havah. Amru Rav Lasafre, Vechinamar Luhu Rav Huna Lasafre. Rav tells the Sofrim, and Rav Huna, who happens to be a student of Rav, also tells the Sofrim, Ki Kamina Bashili Kisra Bashili Vafagav de Messir Luchumili Behini. Ki Kamaisa Behini Kisra Behini Vafagav de Messir Luchumili Bashili. Hini and Shili are the names of two towns. Okay? I know it's confusing, but that, in other words, they sister cities, if you will. Maybe. I don't know the geography. And it doesn't matter. Anyway, let's say that there was an authorization of a loan where the loan was authorized in one town. But when it came, and let's even say that the loan occurred in one town. But when writing the actual document itself, we happen to all be in another town. So, what should we do when we write the document down? When we're writing the document, note where we currently are in the document. Meaning, also record where the loan took place, but note that we are in a different town when writing down the document. Why? Why would we want to do that? Because of the Gemara's previous instructions. Lo mechze kishikra. Because we don't want to appear like giving off any kind of untruth. If we are in this town right now as we're writing the document, even though, let's say, the loan took place in another town or the sale took place in another town, but while writing the document we're in a different town, note that in the document so that you want the document to reflect as much information as possible and not be misrepresentative at all. Amar Rav Haiman Danakishtari Bar Meir Zuze V'Amar Shavi Nialei Trei B'nei Chimshin Chimshin. So let's say that a lender's got a single note and it's $100. So in other words, he has a outstanding he has a note against a borrower, and the note is for $100. And he goes over to the sofer and he says, "Do me a favor. If you could break it down for me." Meaning, let's rip this note up and let's write up two notes, each one being $50. Sounds like what he's making is a reasonable request. Now again, the Gemara is not clear. Is he, on these new documents, is he going to have the ability to date them to the back to the original day of the 100? My sense is that he would not be allowed to, but still, the point is that he just wants to break the 100 note. Note over here, I mean not as like paper, you know, $100 paper bill like we have nowadays, but note meaning an IOU, but he wants to break the $100 note into 250s. It sounds reasonable. The Gemara says don't do it. And the Gemara is going to explain why.
Yeah,
right. It's not a witness problem. The Gemara is going to explain what the problem is. So, the Gemara says we don't do it. My time. And why? Why wouldn't we want to do that? Because the Chachamim say we have to take everyone's better interest in mind. Meaning, it's better for the Malva to keep the note at 100. It's better for the Lova to keep the note on 100, the Gemara is going to explain. Nichalei l'malva, kedei sheyechav l'paro. As far as the malva is concerned, it's better. Meaning, why did the malva ask to break it down to 50-50? Presumably because the borrower came at him and the borrower said, "Look, I don't got $100 on me. I got 50. So the borrower's like, "Okay, fine." But in other words, so let's just take the note of 100, break it to 250s. Gemara says, no, Malve, lender, it's better to keep the $100 note and in a case of partial payment. Like we said yesterday, like we are reiterating right now, in the event that you are holding a $100 note against a person and he made a partial payment, he's going to be incentivized and motivated to pay you back as soon as possible. Because keep in mind, even though he paid back part of the loan and even though he was written a receipt, you're holding the full face value of the obligation on your piece of paper. And that's going to inspire him and motivate him to pay the balance. Because if he doesn't pay the balance, he has a chance of losing the receipt and you demanding the full value. So it's going to motivate him to pay back. So lender, you don't want to do that. You don't want to break it down to 50-50. And as far as you borrower is concerned, you also borrower are going to benefit by keeping it at a $100 note and not breaking it out to 250s. And the reason why is for the following. The Gemara now is talking about a shtar nifgam, a contract, a document that is literally dented. A dented document, what does that mean? Rashbam over here quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos. Yeah. Rashma over here quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos, and the Gemara in Ksuvos goes on to explain. Let's say that a lender lent money and the borrower obviously borrowed the money and made a partial payment. And we all agree now that there was a partial payment that was made. Lender says it was. The borrower says it was a partial payment. And just to make it even better, let's even say that there's a receipt. We know there was a partial payment that was paid. The lender now wants the balance of his document, the balance of his loan. So the Gemara Ksuvos teaches us that the borrower only has to pay the balance only after the lender makes a shvua. If the lender admits that the loan was already partially paid, so now the contract has been somewhat dented. Again, it's a figurative language. The contract has been somewhat dented. And now, basically, it's a little suspicious. You mean to say that he doesn't owe you everything? Oh, and he only owes you part of it? So you, the lender, in order for you to collect the balance of your loan, you're going to have to make a shvua. And so therefore we say to the borrower, better to keep the original note of 100. Because once you partially pay, and at a later point in time now when it comes to paying the balance, you're only going to have to pay the balance only if he's ready to make a shvua. So it works to your advantage to keep the original note at 100. Fine. Amar Rava, continuing in the Gemara, third wide line. Hi, Mandanaki Treshtari Bene Chimshin Chimshin Vamar Shavin and Yale Chad Barmea Lama Shvin and Lay. We're going now in the other direction, where the lender has two notes outstanding against the borrower, two $50 notes. And now the lender would like to consolidate it into one single note of 100. Again, the Gemara says, don't do it. The Gemara is saying, don't do it to both parties. You Malva, don't do it. You Lova, don't do it. And this is to the benefit of both parties of the loan document, of the loan transaction. Now to the Malva, it's good for you. Why? Because if you roll the whole thing into one $100 note, and then there's a partial payment, the only way you're going to be able to receive the other is only if you make a shvua. So keep it at $250. That way he'll pay you $150 note, but you're holding now the other $50 note, and you can collect that without having to make a shvua. It's better for you. And to you, Lova, I say, you definitely want to keep it at $250 notes as opposed to one $100 note, because you pay up one, and you're not going to be super motivated to pay the other, because you're paying off each note in full. So it's better for you also, Lova. Amar Avashka, Haiman, Danakishari, Bar Meir, Zuzeva, Amar, Shavinu, Niali, Chad, Bar Chimshin. Let's say the lender wants to do the following. The lender wants to restructure the loan, where it originally reflected 100, and he'd like to drop it down to 50. Not because he got paid, just simply because he's a good guy. And he knows that the borrower is really struggling. And so therefore, he just simply says, okay, let's just turn this into a $50 note. So lo mashrinalei my time amrin and high mifre pare v'amrle havli shtari v'amrle irkasli v'kasov le tavra umafel glehai v'amrle high achrinahu. So the Gemara says, because I'll tell you what, the lender seems like a nice guy, but it really could very well be that the lender is just being conniving. And how? Because let's imagine for just a moment that, as much as he wants to suggest, hey, I'm a really good guy, and I want to give him a break. I want to just cut the note down from 100 to 50. Maybe here's what really happened. What really happened was is that the borrower really paid up the loan in total. And when the borrower says, hey, give me back my loan doc, so the lender says, oh, I lost it. I'm really sorry. Okay, fine. So we'll write up a receipt. And we did. We wrote up a receipt for the borrower saying that he paid back the loan in full. Which loan did he pay back? The $100 loan. And then a year from now this lender, who lost his receipt, air quotes once again, who lost his receipt, now goes to the court and says, hey, look, I feel so bad for my borrower. He can't pay me the 100. Do me a favor. Let's just rewrite this document to a $50 note. Fine. And they rewrite it to a $50 note. Now the lender goes to the borrower and says, okay, you owe me 50. Borrower's looking at it and saying, are you crazy? I don't owe you 50. I owed you 100. I paid you the 100. And I have a receipt to prove it. And he has actually the receipt. But now the lender has a new loan document. And it's not $100. It's $50. So the Gemara says so. And the Gemara is saying we're not going to do it. That's exactly the Gemara's point. The Gemara is simply saying that we're not going to revise any kind of loan document for fear of what I just described. Okay. The next Mishnah, we're on Kufayin Beis Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah towards the bottom of the Amud.
want to just make two arguments of breaking 150-50 is good, and
no, no, the Gemara, no.
Both ways are...
The Gemara rejected everything. The Gemara rejected taking 100 and breaking it to 250s. The Gemara rejected taking 250s, consolidating it to 100. And the Gemara rejected taking 100 and breaking... And
there is another, you know, like you can apply these reasons to be good for the other one.
In other words, there are reasons why we wouldn't want we. The general position of the Gemara is that we don't want to touch the loan document. We leave it alone, and in terms of proof that part of it was paid, we'll write a receipt. But there's no consolidation. There's no division. Meaning, we keep the original loan documents as they are. That's the Gemara's overarching idea. We are in the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. This Mishnah, admittedly, is going to be a little bit of a tangent, meaning we have been pretty focused throughout this 10th parak about shtaros. The Gemara over here is a slight detour, and the Rishonim, the Rashbam, no, but the Rishonim give suggestions in terms of why the Mishnah ends up here. Okay, but we're just going to learn the Mishnah together. Shnei Achen. The Mishnah over here describes the following. Now, you may remember this Mishnah. We did this back on Daf Yud Gimel. It's fair to say that's a long time ago. It's about 5 months ago that we did this Mishnah. Okay. That's all. Just 5 months ago. Remember? Shnei Achen, Echad Ani ve'Echad Ashir. So, there were two brothers. One was wealthy and the other one was poor. V'hinich lem aviyem merchatz beis abad. And dad left for them as part of the estate either a bathhouse or an olive press. Now, these are high-end items that dad left as part of the estate. And now, high-end items means that you can only use them if you are wealthy. Right? Consider nowadays. Right? Wealthy people in America. I'm talking about really wealthy people in America, so they have planes. So if you and I had enough money to buy a plane, which we don't, but if you and I had enough money to buy a plane, so the purchase of the plane is one thing. In other words, now you want to use a plane, you need a lot of money. Right? I don't know if you're following... I'm sorry for talking nonsense in the middle of the daf, but Jeter wants to buy the Marlins, for anyone who's following. So he has enough money to perhaps lay down the money to buy the Marlins, but then you have to operate it as well. And he doesn't have that kind of money. And so it looks like he's not going to buy it. But okay. So anyway, but just the simple point is that, in other words, with these high-end items, so you need money in order to use them. So here you have now two brothers, one rich, one poor, and dad left for them a bathhouse, an olive press. So these are only usable, they only have utility if you have the money to use them. You need olives in order to use the olive press. You need resources in order to use the bathhouse. And asan l'schar lemtza. Now, if what dad did is it wasn't for personal use, but it was for rental purposes, so that's great. So in other words, let's keep it as a rental, which means now that we'll rent it out and the two brothers will split the revenue. That part's great. Asan la'atzmo. If, however, when dad had the olive press and dad had the bathhouse, it was for his dad's own personal usage, and now dad left it for the kids, so we're going to keep it as dad had used it. Meaning, we're not going to commercialize it. We'll keep it as a private entity. It will be the family's bathhouse. It will be the family's olive press.
Huh? Why can't they commercialize it?
Because the wealthy son now can make the argument that, look, this is how dad used it, and we're going to use it in the same manner. Okay, so Hare Ha'asher Omer Lani Kachlecha Avadim V'Yirchetzu B'Merchatz Kachlecha Zeisim Ovav V'Asa B'Beis Abad. And now the wealthy brother can say to the poor brother, and I know it's not fair, but I've mentioned this before, it's important to remember, life isn't fair. I sound like a father right now. I know. So but life isn't fair, and the Mishnah reflects this. And the Mishnah says the wealthy brother has every right to say to the younger, to the poor brother, "Look, I'm really sorry. You want to use it? Okay, go ahead. You don't have the olives? Okay, it's unfortunate. You want to use the bathhouse, but you don't have the attendants or the resources to pay in order to operate the bathhouse? Okay, fine." So, Shnaim Shah, you'll be your Acha, Shem Echad, Yosef Ben Shem Vishem Echad. Sorry, let me do that again. Shnaim Shah, you'll be your Acha, Shem Echad, Yosef Ben Shem Vishem Acher, Yosef Ben Shem. En Yochon Lozi Sharchov Zelzeb. So, you have two people in town, and they have the same name. So now, they borrow money from one another. The problem, of course, is that because there is no way on the document that we know which one is the lender and which one's the borrower, so therefore they can't produce a note one against the other. Give me a moment. I know. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And on top of that as well, if let's say you are neither of those two, but you're a lender and you lend to one of those two, and now you go to the court and you say, I want my payment. From who? Or from whom, I should say, better English. From Yosef ben Shimon. Oh, really? Which Yosef ben Shimon? You know, the two of them in town. Oh, that's a good... Oh. Darn. So now the lender, the Mishnah says the lender now is going to have a problem getting paid, a problem. He won't be able to get paid back because there's no way to positively identify, at least with the contract, there's no way to positively identify who we borrowed from. Now the truth of the matter is, sorry, just give me a moment. That the truth of the matter is that there's one other case which the Mishnah did not mention. And that is, what if one of them is the lender against, not the other Yosef ben Shimon, but against somebody else in town. Stay tuned, we're going to discuss that in the Gemara. Nimsa la'acher bein shtarosav, shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon parua. Shtaro shnei peruim. If, let's say, a person found amongst his documents a receipt, and the receipt said that Yosef ben Shimon paid back his loan, so then both Yosef ben Shimons are off the hook. Now, the Gemara is going to be a little bit clear exactly what that case is. Stay tuned, we're going to discuss that better, later on, not today. Ketzad yasu. So now, Mishnah over here says, so, it's a little bit perplexing, right? Meaning you have two Yosef ben Shimons in town, and one of you comes for a loan. What are you going to do? Meaning, you love to lend the money, but you know, however, that with another Yosef ben Shimon in town, you're not going to be able to produce a contract against him. So the Mishnah gives simple advice in terms of what to do. The Mishnah says, Yishaleshu, meaning, go back another generation, right? Their grandfathers are going to have the same name? Probably not. And if that's a way to differentiate, good. Now let's say the grandfathers did have the same name. Fine. One of them is tall, the other one is short. Note that in the document. I gave it to the tall Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. Agreed. Is the burden of this on the sofer? I think the burden of this is on the lender. I think it's the lender's responsibility to try to differentiate. You're right. The sofer has to, in other words, to be a sofer, it was back then similar to what we would have as a lawyer. Meaning, yes, the sofer would have to know the halachas. I mean, we've already gone through a number of times where the Amoraim are telling the soferim, you know, be careful about this, be careful about that, etc., etc. Okay, yichtavu simen, v'imayu misumanim, yichtavu kohen. Now, let's say they're both short, they're both tall, they both have red hair. So then tribes. One's a Kohen, one's not a Kohen. Basically, the Mishnah says, find a point of differentiation and write that in the contract so that now you can successfully produce the contract against the identified Yosef ben Shimon. Haushtara, let's start with the Gemara. Haushtara. Let's come to me after. I want to get through at least the first part of the daf. How shall denafik lebeidina de ravuna da aviksiv be ani ploni bar ploni levisi mana mimcha? A document came in front of to the court of Ravuna, and in this document, you know, we always refer to the loan document as an IOU. Okay, and it could be really, it almost can be represented by three letters, the letter I, O, and U. But in other words, we refer to it as an IOU, but obviously in the loan document itself, in a formal loan document, you of course want to write the name of the lender, the name of the borrower. You're going to want to put as much information as you possibly can so that you can successfully collect your money. Pashut, that's obvious. The Gemara over here discusses the following scenario. This was an actual case where the name of the borrower was written in the loan document, and as far as the lender was concerned, the lender just simply was written the word, I know I'm saying English, but you. Meaning, so-and-so borrowed money from you. And the assumption is, who the you is? Who the note holder is. The note holder is the you. So now, is this an enforceable contract? Where the lender was not identified, it just simply says, mimcha. And now, can we enforce such a loan document? Amar Rav Huna Mimcha Afilu Meresh Kalusa V'Afilu Mishvur Malka. So Rav Huna says, do you know who you could be? Could be anybody. It could be the High Exilarch. It could be the Shvar Malka, right? The political leader at the time. Meaning, as the Rashbam points out, as Tosfos points out, this is sarcasm at its highest level. Meaning, we have no idea who you is. And I know you're holding the note. And so therefore you're making an argument, what do you mean who the you is? Me? We wrote a contract and the contract says that you that so-and-so owes me money. I borrowed money from him. The him is obviously referring to me. I'm holding the note. So Rav Huna's position is, yeah, but it didn't say your name in the document. And you may be the note holder, but how do I know the note was written to you? Could very well be that it was written to somebody else. He dropped it, he lost it, and you picked it up. Right?
So,
what?
Right?
Yeah. So, right. So, Amar le Rav Chisa le Rav Apok Anibad le Orsa by la Rav Huna Minach. So, Rav Chisa gives Rabba a little advance notice. Look, tonight I'm telling you the question for tomorrow. Meaning, I know what happened in Rav Huna's court, and I know Rav Huna is going to consult with you. So you know what? So tonight. Go home, study up, and tomorrow this is the question he's going to ask you. Dak v'ashkach t'tanya, and the Gemara now says that he found the following brisa. And the brisa now is going to be seemingly clear evidence that even though the lender's name was not identified in the loan doc, it's still going to be an enforceable loan. Okay, now I'll put a pause right in here, literally. I'll put a note right here. We'll pause over here. We'll continue this discussion tomorrow. Let's quickly recap. Today we finished the discussion the basic discussion of writing a receipt. Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda debate when the note is partially paid. Do we write a receipt? Rav Yossi says yes, we write a receipt, and Rav Yehuda disagrees. But the halacha seemingly is going like Rav Yossi throughout the Gemara, one amar after another. Now there are a couple of amarim who are in disagreement, but one amar after another says that we're writing a receipt, and the Gemara says that in terms of dating the receipt, make sure that if the loan doc is post dated, so then you should record that in the receipt. You should do something so that no shenanigans are played. The Gemara notes, it was such an interesting Gemara. The Gemara notes nowadays we don't do that. Gemara says that's your loss, meaning we told you what to do. You don't want to follow our instructions. That's a you problem. The Gemara then talked about taking loan documents, consolidating loan documents, dividing loan documents. The Gemara says, don't do that. Don't tamper with the original loan documents. Keep it as it is. In terms of any reflection of partial payment, write a receipt. The Gemara then, we quoted the Mishnah. The Mishnah talked about brothers who inherited an item that requires serious money for operation. The wealthy brother says to the poor brother, look, it's unfortunate, but if you have money, use it. If not, then I'll help myself to it. And then the Gemara went on to describe and discuss what happens if there are people in the town with the same name. And we will and that's where we're going to start tomorrow, especially the Gemara's discussion right now about where the lender's name is actually not in the loan document. And is that a collectible loan document? We're going to be discussing that tomorrow.